This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Dan Hurley. Coming up later, we'll hear about a program to help young people with disabilities find independence outside of home and school. But first, women and alcohol. Some report women are drinking more now than ever before. Others say that's just because women are more willing to admit to it. We're going to talk today about the risks women face when they have more than one drink a day. Joining me are Dr. Elise Lauer, professor of medicine at the UC Cancer Institute and medical director of the Breast Cancer Center, director of assessment at Beckett Springs Treatment Center, Darcy Lichnerowitz, and writer Sarah Stancorb. She wrote a story for Cincinnati Magazine called Sour Grapes, When a Social Activity Becomes a Debilitating Habit. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Certainly glad to have you here. Dr. Lauer, I'd like to start with you and have you define for us what is normal drinking, if there is such a thing, what is a safe amount of drinking, and what is not?
You know, that's a question that's been around for a long time, and our answers have changed dramatically within the last couple of years. From a cancer perspective, and again, I'm a medical oncologist taking care of women with breast diseases and breast cancer, we now know that smaller amounts of alcohol are probably the safest. We used to say that women could drink up to 10 to 15 a week. We now view that as
10 or 15 drinks a week.
Mm-hmm. We now view that as being much too much. And our current guidelines are about 5 a week, anywhere between 3 to 5 a week. That's a big, big, big change compared to what we used to say just 4 or 5 years ago.
And Sarah, in your article, you talked with a number of women who go out together and use the wine night for a way to relax. How do you think women? What is the perception you found about women and drinking? What they feel like?
So I think, to start the conversation, a few women actually questioned, are women really drinking more? And through my research for the story, I found the health impacts are increasing. So there seemed to be evidence that, yes, we are drinking more. But as the conversation continued, a number of the women mentioned how they'd noticed how their drinking differs from their mother's drinking when they were kids.
And different from their mothers, how? What was different?
So their mothers, for instance, were the designated drivers, and their fathers would drink. Or their mother would just be at the one home sober while their fathers were off at happy hour. And all these women, they call an Uber, and they and their spouses are both out drinking if they're going out drinking. Or they go to happy hour after work because they're professionals too. But the other really interesting thing for me was not only are these women drinking when their mothers hadn't, but also their mothers now drink more. Their mothers drink more now than they were when they were younger. Yeah.
When they were younger. Goodness. And let's talk about treatment. Do you find do you treat only women?
No, we treat both men and women.
And do you find an increase in women that you're treating? And
there certainly is. There's still an overwhelming number of men who seek treatment, but we find that about 24% of the patients that we get are there for primary alcohol use problems. And of that 24%, only about 35% of those are women. But we are seeing women who are a lot more comfortable saying, I have a problem. My life's not working anymore, and I do need help.
Let's just talk in general here, because I think an awful lot of people think it's fine to go out and have a wine night or a drink night. And apparently, Sarah, from your article, wine really is one of the more popular drinks for women.
Right.
So, Dr. Lauer, you talked about 5 drinks a week being the limit. Is no drinks better?
Well, there are lots of studies that were looking at lesser amounts of alcohol, including what we used to call teetotaling in the past. And there are some suggestions that people who drink no alcohol may actually have a slightly higher death rate. Now, that may be because of some of the cardiovascular issues. Hard to tease through that. But clearly now the sweet spot seems to be a very small number, less than one drink a night. Now, it's interesting because from my perspective, my women, when I take their history of alcohol, it's not that they think they have a problem. we're talking about the number of drinks in women to prevent cancers, in particular breast cancers, and things that could increase the likelihood that you might develop a malignancy because of your alcohol exposure. Not necessarily that you're drinking to excess or you're in a situation of where you're not able to remain in control.
So you're not talking about addiction?
No. This is a little bit different. And those numbers are really quite low as far as the health risk is associated. And most women, after they're diagnosed with breast cancer, will do anything they can to try to reduce their risk that they're going to get another cancer or their first cancers will come back. And so one of those, what we call modifiable lifestyle risk that we have, is alcohol. Just like smoking a few years ago, and of course now we say zero cigarettes, zero tobacco use, we're now really weaning down on the amount of alcohol that we think is safe from a cancer perspective, and in turn from an overall life expectancy perspective.
Darcy, what about in terms of addiction? Is there an amount that you can say, yeah, once you get to this point, that's too much? Or if you still have to have one glass a night, is that too much?
You know, I think it really depends a lot on the person. It depends a lot on different risk factors they might have. You know, if someone has concerns about it, they really need to evaluate what is a safe amount for me. But the World Health Organization has some recommendations about what limits should be for genders and for ages. And so I think it's very important to keep in mind what your own personal history is, you know, what you're trying to accomplish in life. And if it starts to impact your life, that's probably your first red flag that it's too much.
Now, Sarah, in your article, you talked about how some women say, you know, I only have one drink. I'm not out to go, you know, drink a whole bottle of wine. Right. Are you finding that's true with most of the people you talked with? Or do some people really say, you know, it got to the point where one drink became two, became a bottle?
It was kind of all over the place. So some people, I interviewed one woman who mentioned when her kids were younger, just how it really is. It's very stressful and isolating to be home all day by yourself with small children who don't want to take no for an answer. And by the end of the day, every day, she'd have a drink when her husband got home. And now that they're older, she doesn't feel that need for a release as much. So she only drinks on the weekends. Other women drink multiple drinks multiple times a week and say, I don't have a problem.
I think you said in your article it was the American Medical JAMA Psychiatry publication that said that alcohol actually is really for women becoming a public health crisis.
Yes.
And you're shaking your head, Darcy. You agree also that is really that bad now?
Yeah. You know, a lot of times for women, They come in, sure, for alcohol detox and for alcohol treatment, but what we actually see more than someone coming in as a woman saying, I have a problem with alcohol, is a woman coming in with other mental health issues. And once you dig through depression, once you look at someone who's feeling suicidal and you kind of cut through some of that, you find out that not only maybe they're dealing with some depression or some other mental health issues, alcohol may be playing a huge role in that. So it may be either a secondary or a contributing factor to that. So it's even much higher than a lot of women acknowledge. They might say, you know, I'm depressed. But when you look at how they're using alcohol to cope with that, that's when you start to see that interplay as a real concern.
Well, alcohol is a depressant, right? So does the alcohol then cause depression, or are they depressed and then turn to alcohol and become more depressed? I mean, how does that?
That's your chicken and egg question, right? I think for each person, it might be a little different. Some people start using alcohol to cope with those issues. Some people find that their mental health symptoms come on as a result of using different substances, in this case, alcohol. So it really kind of depends on each scenario. But it's always a topic of discussion when you're talking about treatment and how to get healthy. Mm-hmm.
And we women are having more problems with more alcohol use. Many men are cutting down, and we are increasing. So I think that's why it's a particular problem of our female gender.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's probably something that we got late into the party. It's kind of like cigarette smoking. You know, unfortunately, we copied our male counterparts as it became easier to do so in public. And now women have that sense of freedom, as you pointed out, to be able to drink much more openly. And I do think that a lot of people don't think they have, quote, a problem, but they don't realize that they may be impairing their health. And so I think we can't always say, do you have a problem with alcohol? Because that implies to them some sort of addiction or intolerance or inability to function. nobody wants to be driving impaired or something of that nature. You can still have an alcohol issue and not view it that much as a problem. But it can be too much even at low levels.
Let's talk about it generationally. And Sarah, you made a point where some people say that they watched what their mothers did and their mothers are drinking now more than they did. Is it generational or is it a sign of the times?
That's an interesting question. You know, we see a lot of people come through from, you know, 18 all the way up to in their 80s. But when I just think, and this is just anecdotally speaking, you know, a lot of the women that we have coming through who are identifying alcohol as the primary problem in their life that they want treatment for are older. They're in their 40s and 50s and 60s. These are women who have, you know, had very successful careers, a lot of them, and they're very ashamed of where they're at now. But it is interesting because a lot of the women we see coming through saying, I need help, are actually older than you might think.
Sarah, what'd you find with the people you talked with?
I primarily interview women in their 30s and 40s who'd speak about their moms. We had one night at the bar, we ran into a woman in her 60s who said once she got older, she started to drink more. And now she's a wine connoisseur. But also, it was actually back at Springs during that interview. I heard that due to the opioid epidemic, with the middle generation of parents falling to opioid addiction and they're either incarcerated or they're dealing with their health issues or they've died, their children are now being placed with the grandmothers. And so you have women on fixed incomes who are under a tremendous amount of stress because it's their own child is either dealing with addiction or has died. And now they're also raising children all over again. And as a consequence, they're drinking more.
And they're older. They're in their 50s or in their 60s then. Sarah, in your article, you talked about the marketing and how there was a time when people were really taking the alcohol ads and directing them towards men, and that's changed.
Yes, absolutely. So if you look a century ago, the assumption was men are the drinkers, it's men in the saloons. That was a premise behind Prohibition, shut down the bars, men all quit drinking. But once you hit the 50s and 60s, the advertisements are geared toward both men and women. And now we have we were living in a period where brands are specifically made and marketed toward women, be that wine or wine coolers or certain beers. But the wine in particular, I think, is fascinating because you really can't go on social media without either seeing a drunk on wine mom meme or a woman with a selfie with a glass of wine. And that association between women and wine, especially for my demographic of moms, it's kind of part of the culture now. That's the default, and that it's just part of life. And that, I thought, was just fascinating. It switched.
Dr. Lauer, you had some thoughts about that as well.
Well, I think it's quite similar to what we went through with smoking in the 60s and how all of a sudden the media started specifically targeting the female sex. And even the certain cigarettes were cigarettes that women bought, not that men bought. So I think we're to an era now of where we need to help people to realize that we don't need to do that. And that it's time that we start seeking alternative ways to cope with this stress that women are under, particularly the moms that you interviewed and how stressful they are. So I think it's our job, particularly in healthcare providing, to help people figure up other integrative alternative strategies that are much healthier for them. We're going to have stress. We cannot get rid of stress. It's how we handle stress that becomes so very, very important. Whether it's a cancer diagnosis or a child that's having issues in school or whatever, we have to figure up a way to give women as well as men new ways of handling the stresses of everyday life so that we're not turning so much to alcohol, even small amounts of alcohol. And I think that's where we are now is how do we take this next step to offer for our patients better solutions?
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. We have Amy on the line. Hi, Amy. What's your question?
I had a couple comments, and also I believe from my own experience, if you think you're drinking too much, you are, and I'm in my mid-50s. I've had two lumpectomies in 3 years, and what helped me reduce my amount, I was going through two bottles of, not saying that that caused the, I had stage zero breast cancer in both, but I know the risk factor, so I greatly did reduce my amount of alcohol consumption. I was going through two bottles of Chardonnay a week, easy. And what I did quite a, some many months ago is when I open up a bottle of wine, and I never buy the large bottles, I get a Sharpie out and I write, I mark on the bottle the day of the week and the date that I open that. And one drink is 5 ounces, and that's a big wake-up call. I drink very little now compared to what I used to. I make sure I don't go more than one drink a day, and I'm trying to reduce that from what I heard earlier on your show.
You also mentioned, yes, go ahead.
What's helped me is that I drink wine out of very small glasses, and usually a double shot glass. And that helps a lot. And I only buy non-alcoholic beer. When I feel like having more wine, I switch to non-alcoholic beer, and some are very good.
Well, thank you so much, and good luck. We appreciate you calling. Thanks for your call, Amy. Bye-bye. Darcy, maybe you can talk a little bit about, is it a matter sometimes of reducing, or is it a matter of eliminating?
You know, I think that, again, I hate to keep answering the question the same way, but for a lot of people, it is kind of an individual decision. Mm-hmm. For some people, one drink is too much. And for other people, they can drink in moderation. I think it also depends on what you're looking to accomplish. Are you looking at your overall health, or has your drinking reached a point where it is a problem and you have to take more drastic measures to ensure that your health stays intact? So it really does kind of depend on what you need to accomplish for yourself.
Well, what do you advise people when they come in? Where do you start? I mean, do you just say, okay, we're taking away all alcohol, you know, go to your room? Obviously, that's not it. What do you do? What is the treatment?
So by the time people come to us, you know, their drinking is typically far past what is healthy for them. And that's usually what brings them to us. They're like, I know my life is in a shambles. My health is suffering. I need help now. So we're at the point where for many people, it may be even at a life-threatening point. Alcohol can be life-threatening to withdraw from. So we're starting there with making sure that their health is safe first, making sure that they're not going to have seizures or what we call DTs, things like that. But we're also looking to at how is this affecting your life, your work, your responsibility to your family, your relationships, things like that.
And then you just advise them, and because yours is a program where people live there, correct?
They can come to us for acute treatment, absolutely. So they can come to us for fairly short-term detox, and then we have some rehab programming as well as some outpatient programming. And I think that's the big point that I want to make in this statement is that it's not just about detox. You know, for some people, they come in and they think, I just got to dry out. Sometimes, yes, you do have to do that, but that's only one piece of what you need to do to get your life back on track. And I love what Dr. Lauer was talking about it just a minute ago with, you know, what do you need to do for your life? If you have had a cancer diagnosis, if you're struggling in some way, it's about getting your life to where your life is in a good place again. So figuring out what coping skills you need to develop, how you need to put different practices into your life to be healthy and happy and fulfilled, as opposed to needing to get out your box of wine or your glass of whiskey. What do you need to do instead?
Dr. Lauer, what do you advise patients if they are dealing with stress? You said it's, you know, everybody has stress, but it's how you deal with it. What do you encourage them to do?
We try to take an integrative approach today, which incorporates healthy eating, exercise, stress reduction, and many of the integrative programs that we have currently at UC and around our city are very helpful. It's not something that happens overnight, but the healthier you can be all the way around, the better the outcome is going to be. You'll be a healthier mother, a healthier wife, healthy employee. Everything will be so much better. And so we take it as an integrative strategy. It's not just cut down your alcohol. It's also, okay, I need to go to the gym, or maybe I need to take a Zumba course, or maybe I need to eat veggies. Maybe I need a class that tells me how to do this. My sleep habits might be atrocious. Maybe we need sleep medicine to help us. So it's an integrative strategy to improve the overall sense of well-being of patients today. And that starts when we first talk to them, which is usually soon after their diagnosis. That's often not the day that you want to say you got to give up alcohol. That is just too stressful. You've just been hit with that bad path report. You have to deal with surgery and radiation and chemo and pills and all kinds of stuff. But you have to start laying the foundation on day one that there are integrative supportive services within our community that can help you to deal with these. And as you've already pointed out, sometimes one person needs a little bit of one. They need something else of another. It's a bit of a smorgasbord. But you can get an overall assessment on how to get healthier and to remain healthier.
You talk about people that drink a drink a day or two drinks a day. But what about people that don't really drink at all and then just binge? I mean, is that safer, more dangerous?
You know, binge drinking is hard to look at except in the college population. And for the most part, we feel it's very unhealthy to binge drink. So first of all, medically, you will see very bad effects on your liver after an acute binge. And you'll see many more health problems associated with that. So we discourage people from binge drinking. It is not a good idea to save up those 5 to 7 drinks in a week and do them all Saturday night. That's not a good idea.
And in addition to just your health risk, you know, what we know about binge drinking is that it does put you at risk socially, too. So I think there's other risk factors to take into play as well.
Put you at risk socially because you could drink and drive? And what do you mean?
Drinking and driving, you know, your vulnerability increases when you're intoxicated. So I think just general safety becomes a concern at that point.
Did you find, Sarah, that many women were binge drinkers? That you talked to?
Not that they would call it that. And stepping back also to what we're talking about in terms of seeking sobriety and treatment, with this story, the response that I got, it was very interesting. I got many, many people writing into me, but it was in direct messages or private messages or people stopping me in social situations and pulling me aside because they wanted to talk about this topic. But it felt like something they couldn't talk about in a large group. And that was interesting to me. The folks who wrote in, some had gotten sober, but they didn't want the rest of their friends, to other people who didn't know about that, to know. And so to me, the big takeaway was it's maybe no longer taboo for women to drink, but there still seems to be a huge taboo around women seeking sobriety. And I'm just grateful we're having a conversation about this.
So there's a stigma. Related to more for women than men or for anybody?
I think for anybody, but we see that a lot with women. And you're talking about that. What's very interesting, I think about conversations that I've had with patients, and it strikes me that women who come in for substance use treatment with us, many women who come in for treatment for opiate addiction or for benzodiazepine addiction, different types of addiction, are much more comfortable saying, I have a problem with this, than women who come in with an alcohol problem. You can see a whole different level of shame for some of these women who are talking about their drinking than even women who are addicted to harder drugs. And it's very interesting that there is a whole different flavor to that.
Why do you think that is?
You know, my assumption is, and this is a guess, I think for a lot of women, alcohol is not illegal. You don't have to go somewhere creepy to get it. You go to, you know, a gas station or Kroger. There's nothing wrong with buying some alcohol. Nobody's going to get all judgy with you about it. Mm-hmm. But you know that there's something amiss. And for a lot of women, you know, that's embarrassing. We failed. It's something that we should be able to control. It's not like we really risk going to jail over this. No one's taking our children away just because we had a drink of wine over dinner. Mm-hmm. But it is still a shame for them because they know it's out of control.
Well, it is a risk, as you said, Dr. Lauer, and as well, all of you have found that it is. It's something that there's, I think we could talk a whole lot more about, but we are out of time. I want to thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We've been talking about women and alcohol. My guests today were Dr. Elise Lauer, professor of medicine at the UC Cancer Institute and medical director of the Breast Cancer Center, director of assessment at Beckett Springs Treatment Center, Darcy Lichnerowitz, and writer Sarah Stancorb. She wrote a story for Cincinnati Magazine called Sour Grapes, When a Social Activity Becomes a Debilitating Habit.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.